The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
A lot of sports all of a sudden, huh? Like, we went from nothing to football and basketball and baseball and hockey and tennis, and all of a sudden everyone's playing sports. I hope this lasts. I've read accounts in, you know, like, what would you say, in social media, I guess, about how there's this sense that the media, the sports media, you know, doesn't want these games to play. You couldn't be more wrong. No matter what your political point of view is, of course you want to watch sports. You just want it to be done responsibly. I have to admit, I didn't think baseball would go even this deep into their season. I did not think so. Of course, when we were originally discussing this, testing was not very accessible. There weren't many tests to go around, and now there are. Testing is much cheaper, more widely available, and faster. And so that makes a big difference. And it remains to be seen, though, whether baseball can finish. Football's another story. Because we're going to be going into the fall and winter months, and that we're going to hit flu season. And that's going to combine, still, there's no vaccination. First, they got to figure out a vaccine. It's not hard, not easy to do. And then they got to scale up to vaccinations. And it does not look likely that that's going to result in any kind of safer environment. So if we're banking on a vaccination for this football season. So I don't doubt that they can get some games in at this point. I don't know how many, but, you know, you hope for the best. Because my strong feeling is that if they are getting a lot of games in and we're getting deep into the season, it means societally, for lack of a better word, we're also in pretty good shape. Of course, that has not been the reality in the United States during this pandemic. It was, as the news has unfolded in the last week, it is very obvious that it did not need to be this bad and was completely mishandled. And so here we are. But now, hopefully, people can be more responsible than they have been. And you know, what we really hope is that we're okay. And as Sean Doolittle, the relief pitcher for the Nationals, good pitcher, said before the season started, sports is like a reward for a healthy society, a functioning society. So hopefully we keep playing, and that means that we're functioning better. Meantime, we did get to watch football last night. And let me tell you a story. We do a DraftKings league. Me, Raj, Marcellus used to be in it, but he lost so much he quit. He used to quit like halfway through, but now he refuses to start. And a few other people. What do we got in the group, Raj? 6-8 people?
Yeah, and word
Mason
is we got
from
a new,
Mason in Ireland.
Mason in Ireland, Ben Lyons, Bill Wolf, and Jalen Rose wants to join the crew now.
Yeah, Jalen's going to be in. Nick Tutt's going to play this year, right?
Yeah, Tutt's is in. He's in.
So a bunch of people behind the scenes and in front of the camera at ESPN, basically. And more or less. So Raj gets on everyone to make sure, because he forms the league, and he gets on everyone to get your teams in on time and everything. And he forms the league. I immediately get my team in, because back in the day, a lot of times I'd be traveling to Vegas, and it was illegal in certain states. And so Vegas was one of them. So if I got to Vegas, I couldn't enter my team. And anyway, so he's like, he gets on us, he group texts, hey, get your teams in. First thing I do, $10 for everyone. I get my team in. Raj, which also often happens. Oh, sorry. I made a new league. Why? Because the first league, I didn't include the Thursday game, says Raj. So I started a new league. Now, put a team in there. Another $10. No problem. Boom. Love. Multiple teams. Fine. Great. More fun. Put another team in. Then I get a text from, by the way, I couldn't find any Thursday players in this league either, because I wanted to take Clyde Edwards-Helaire. All right, no problem. Okay, we look, you know, I get a text from Raj. Are you going to take anyone from the Thursday games? Who are you taking from the Thursday games? So we know we could talk about it on the radio. So I go back again. I'm like, maybe I missed something. No, hey, Raj, Thursday players aren't available. He's like, yeah, that's because I didn't include Thursday games when I formed the league, because then people don't get in the stuff in on time, and our league doesn't start. So I want to just do the Saturday, the Sunday and Monday game. So hold up, Raj. Why would you hector me? Why would you give me a harangue about joining? I joined two different leagues, and then I'm looking up. And why do you ask it? Why are you asking me about a Thursday player if you didn't include Thursday?
because I was playing radio, and we have the great the football scientist Casey Joyner on, and I wanted to see if you had any questions for that. So, and I forgot I took off Thursday. But go ahead.
Yeah. Owe me money because I was going to take Clyde Edwards-Helaire. You know what the problem with Clyde Edwards-Helaire is? That was like the smart guy pick to take, right? So everyone in our league was probably going to take him. So in the end, it probably didn't make a difference. Still, even if you do, it's not even so much about like, well, that cancels out. And so you just want to see your team rack up those points. It's such a pleasurable experience, not just winning in a daily fantasy league, but just watching a player go bananas, even if you know everyone else has them, that you get those points is a good feeling. Like, there's something about DraftKings that taps into every gambling impulse and sports following impulse we have. All right, look, getting to the game itself, Edwards-Helaire didn't even make any, like, he wasn't really dynamic in the passing game, which he was supposed to be. The real weapon that he is not just that he can run the ball. Lots of guys can run the ball. It's that he's a multi-purpose back, which all the elite backs are now. Oh, my God, wait till you get a load of the way they use him. But they used him, as Damian Woody pointed out in the first segment, to kind of control clock. He got his numbers on the ground. Oh, my God. Forget about triplets. Tell me a quadruplets ever that has matched first Mahomes, Hill, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, and Kareem Hunt, right, who's very good. I won't include Damian Williams quite. He's a good running back, but I don't think it's like that next level of special ability, although when you need it, Damian Williams is a clutch player. But now Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and it's not just all one game. Look at him in college. Come on, everybody. Tell me a quadruplets like this ever, where each one has their talents pitched at that level. Because when your eyes are on Tyreek Hill, you're like, I know I'm supposed to think there are better receivers than this, but are there? Like, DeAndre Hopkins has better hands, Michael Thomas, I get it, but like, this is some next level speed. Are there better than Tyreek Hill, really, when your eyes are on him, or Travis Kelce? Certainly not than Mahomes. And now you're going to add this dude? Don't let Clyde Edwards-Helaire be elite. Don't let that happen. Here is their new running back after the game. The Max Kellerman shows. No. Clyde, what do you mean the top? What do you want me to read, Chris? Ah, Clyde Edwards-Helaire was breaking moves. When did the butterflies go away, Clyde?
Honestly, after the first time I got tackled, I was lined up in the back, butterflies, but it took a while for the game to kind of get kicked off. And that's, that's different for the NFL. I guess that's the difference. So ultimately, when we first ran out, you know, just nerves at an all time high. But then, you know, as time went on, we were just kind of on the field. I mean, I was on the field with my brothers and they made me feel at home. So ultimately, first carry, yeah, I kind of felt a lot of emotions. After I got tackled that first time and rolled up, I just knew, all right, it's football, you know, time to roll.
We're in the Patrick Mahomes era. This is a dynasty we're watching. He's played 2 years, 50 touchdowns, 12 interceptions, and an MVP. He should have won the Super Bowl that year. The Patriots got their usual little cheating win when the refs blew a whistle on an encroachment. I mean, come on, a pre-snap penalty gives them the ball back after Tom Brady lost the AFC Championship game by throwing an interception, something that did not affect the play. They get the ball back, and then Mahomes never gets to touch the ball in overtime. Otherwise, they beat the Patriots, and they'd have beaten the Rams. Next year, no excuses, 3 fourth-quarter double-digit comebacks. They win the Super Bowl. This year, they look better than ever.
The Max Kellerman Show, the podcast.
Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker, 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Get your quote at progressive.com today. So, Harden, really, has a lot on the line right now. Look, they're not going to win this series. And the real reason, let's cut through it. Look, you want to talk about a lot of stuff. Daniel House is their sixth man. He is underrated and important to the team. Rajon Rondo is the third wheel of the big three in the playoffs, not in the regular season. I actually think Rondo's a bad player in the regular season. But in the playoffs, he's an all-star. It's undeniable. He's the reverse of Harden. And so now they have three. But none of that's really what's going on. Here's what's going on, and this is the history of the league. LeBron and AD are better than Harden and Westbrook. They're better because they're taller, really. The basket's 10 feet in the air, so it selects out for height. Bill James once wrote about this. Like, if you took all the six-footers in the world, everyone who's 6 feet in the world, what percentage plays in the NBA? A tiny little percent. How about 6 foot six? Well, a much larger percentage, but still not. If you talk seven-footers, it's like 10% of everyone who's 7 feet in the world plays in the NBA. It's very, because it selects out for height. The basket's high up in the air. So if you have two great players who are 6 foot eight and 6 foot 11, they will tend to be better than two great players who are 6 foot five and 6 foot three. I mean, it's just the way it is. The Lakers have, which is why, by the way, a small point guard is never the best player in basketball. It's almost never the case. Apologies to Steve Nash when he won the MVP, won the best player in basketball. Isaiah Thomas, who else do you want to talk about? Steph Curry was in the regular season, and then the playoffs, when the rubbers met the road, you saw LeBron was better than him because he's much bigger. And that's how it is. Like, LeBron and AD are better than Westbrook and Harden. That's why the Lakers are going to win the series, and we all knew that going in. I don't expect the Rockets to win, nor do I think they need to save James Harden's reputation. But they can't just roll over on their backs and ask you to scratch their bellies, right? Like, the Rockets can't do that. James Harden, as I just pointed out, Kirk Goldsberry pointed to his shooting percentage, lower than the more games of 20% or under field goal percentage than MJ and Kobe and KD and LeBron combined in their postseason careers, right? He has like eight of those games, I think it was. And Zach Lowe did a deep dive into James Harden's struggles. And yes, indeed, it appears that the bigger the moment, the more clutch the situation becomes, the worse Harden plays. It is a fact. I'm just going to bet. I'm doing it on faith. I'm doing it because I don't want to sit here and like talk bad about a great player the next day, right? But I'm going to say Harden's going to have a great game five and force a game six. I think they're going to go six games. I think Harden's going to have one great game when they need it. And boy, does he need it. And I don't know if it's because he gets tight because the Rockets have a predictable offense. I mean, look, the reason you don't shoot a long two or a mid-range, the way Daryl Morey and Mike D'Antoni have them playing, you shoot everything behind the arc or in the paint or from the free throw line. Those are the highest percentage shots. You're only going to get so many shots per game, so they should be the reward for them. Think about gambling, right? If you're gonna take that shot, have a good reward or have a high chance at a reward. If it's not a big reward, if the smaller the reward, higher the chance. Free throw shooting or paint scoring. If it's a higher risk, get more reward. Three-point shooting. However, that's because people have practiced the three in the NBA to the point now that a three, you have the same percentage chance of hitting, more or less, as a mid-range or a long two. So why not get the extra point if you're going to take the same risk? However, if they're defending the three, if they're running shooters off the three-point line, and they're giving you the mid-range, well, now it's harder to hit the three, and it's easier to hit the mid-range. Take it if they're going to give it to you. I agree with that. Kendrick Perkins was yelling at me about that the other day. I presume that's supported by the analytics. Anyway, it's supported by my own kind of common sense thinking. So maybe the D'Antoni offense is too predictable. Maybe Harden tightens up. But I have another theory. It's why guys like Greg Maddux in baseball, let's say, or Peyton Manning in football, two of the best who ever did it. You could argue regular season Greg Maddux was the best pitcher of all time. I think you'd lose the argument, but he's on a very short list. You could argue the same thing about Peyton Manning, and I think you'd win it. Best regular season football player who ever lived, Peyton Manning. So why in the playoffs? They were still good. Peyton took a while to get good in the playoffs, but he was good enough eventually. Very bad in the beginning. And Maddux also, he didn't pitch off terribly in the playoffs. But clearly they weren't the same guy. You know, take that compared to Eli Manning, who clearly elevated his brother, Peyton's brother, in the playoffs, but he was only okay in the regular season, or a guy like Curt Schilling or Fernando Valenzuela, who were very good, but clearly got better under pressure consistently. So why is it? What's the difference? My theory is this. players with the fastball, players with the athletic stuff, show up under pressure better than the guys who are doing it with smoke and mirrors. So Peyton Manning did not have a very strong arm, but it was very accurate. And that stuff works when you have, you know, week to week in the regular season. But when they're all focused on you, time to prepare, and the teams are better, so the defenses are better, and they have more time to look at you and focus on what they want to do, and you're facing better athletes who are also smart like you, because it's the playoffs. It's the, they have a lot of those guys. That's where they're in the playoffs. Now it's so it's a little harder to do with smoke and mirrors, because the athletes have smoke and mirrors too, but they're doing it with athletic ability. Eli didn't have a big arm, wasn't as accurate as Peyton, but had a bigger arm than Peyton. Kurt Schilling, a fastball. He had a real major league high-end fastball. That played up when it needed it to. Maddox didn't as much. I think maybe James Harden, whose one ability on ESPN.com like a year ago, he said one athletic ability is he has, he can stop on a dime. He can decelerate quickly. All right. Okay. Otherwise, he's doing it with timing, Euro-stepping, all that kind of stuff. When you get to the next level in the playoffs, like LeBron's smart like that too, and he's 6'8", and he can jump through the, you know, out the building. When you're matched up in that situation, now your smoke and mirrors don't work as well. So maybe that's not even Harden's fault. That's just the way he's built. Maybe that's why, one of the reasons why he is underperformed. But I'm going to bet in that in game five, Harden plays huge. And he forces a game six. They ain't going to win the series against this Lakers team. But I'm hoping Harden, and I'm a Lakers fan. I don't want to get on here Monday and be all on James Harden for being the biggest choker right now. But so far, he's choked. He's been less than the best version of himself when they've needed him most. I take no pleasure in saying that, but I'm going to tell you the truth. By the way, Anthony Davis was in the zone last night with 29 points, 12 rebounds, and 5 assists in the Lakers win over the Rockets to go up 3-1 in the series. This dude is just doing what he wants right now. And you figured that micro ball is not going to play well against AD when LeBron's setting him up offensively.
Max, the podcast.
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. Rod, you know me. More woo. Reach us at 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Raj, are we calling this segment Sucker Bet?
Well, you know, I think out of all the ones we do, when you hear something that you think the wrong team is favored, you can call that a sucker bet. Or if one of our guests lets us know that the public is leaning a certain way and you don't feel that's the case, then yeah, I think that's a sucker bet.
I want to give a prize. Like, can we get someone, like some sponsor, to make prizes available for me to give out? Because I'd like to take calls for someone to name this segment. Let me tell you what's on my mind. I want to call this segment, like, there's an expression. If you don't have the money to cover your bet, it's called, how can I say this? Rhymes with grass bet. Okay? But this is a family-friendly show. It's so fine. I want, that's really what I want to do. Like, in other words, we're not really betting money because we don't have the money to cover it, right?
No.
So rhymes with grass bet. So can someone think of something clever for that title? I haven't been able to do it.
That's all right.
Scared bets ain't winning bets. This is the Sucker Bet.
Feels like something's up.
With Max Kellerman.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. My guest now is David Bearman. ESPN Sports Betting joins us on the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. David, you there?
I'm here. How you guys doing today?
Thank you for joining us on the show today. I want to go through some of these games today, and I want your expert analysis of these lines, okay?
Well, you had said grass bets. I was going to tell you that me and a buddy of mine, when we have lines that we think don't make any sense, we actually call them what rhymes with grass line. So I hear you. I actually know exactly what you're referring to.
Gotcha. So I think it's like a New York street thing. But that anyway, that's what it was known to me growing up as a rhymes with grass bet. It means you bet and you can't cover it in case you lose. Anyway, Bucks at Saints. This is the number one game everyone wants to see this weekend. The Saints are 3.5-point favorites. They're playing at home. What do you think of the line and which way would you go?
Well, Max, to be honest, when this line first started out, it came out in April after the schedule was released. It was actually at 5.5-6, and the whole world has been betting on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers across the board. You guys just asked a few minutes ago about public money, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Super Bowl lot, the bets, their conference lines, their division odds, and, of course, this game have all been moved down because of the heavy public betting on Tom Brady and the Bucs. I actually like the Saints here. When you look at the lines in the offseason and now going into a season without any preseason or training camp, I'm looking for experience, familiarity, and yes, Tom Brady is the best guy out there. He's the GOAT, but he's learning a new offense. He has a new tight end. He has a new running back that just started last week. The Saints model consistency. They got Drew Brees and Peyton and Kamara, and they re-signed Thomas. They're a team that is almost exactly the same as they were last year, and I think when the line was 5.5 and is now down to 3.5, and if you're out there shopping, look for a 3 if you can find one. I do like the Saints, but Max, I'll give you a little bit of a buyer's remorse there with it. For whatever reason, and no one can put their finger on it, the Saints have been a horrible week one team the last 6 years, failing to cover in all 6 of the last week one games and going 1-5 outright. If you remember last year, they had to rally to beat Houston. The year before, they inexplicably lost to the Buccaneers in this very same matchup, obviously without Tom Brady, before beating Cleveland on a missed extra point. So the Saints have not been a good week one team, but I do think with no preseason, no training camp, Brees, Peyton, consistency, and it's going to take a little bit of time for Brady and the Buccaneers to get that offense rolling. It might look different in week 10 or 11, but for week one, I'm siding with the Saints.
Yeah, it's interesting that they start out slowly. I think also the Emmanuel Sanders pickup for the Saints, like, what has the issue really been for them? What has, to me, prevented them from being a little more dynamic offensively? Because they've been pretty good against the run for a dynamic offensive team, like compared to, say, the Rams a couple years ago or the Chiefs a couple years ago. But they lack the dynamism, I think, offensively of those teams because they never really had a number two receiver. They got one now. And I agree. At 3.5, that sounds like the well, listen, any line, you start out with the odds maker saying, we think this is the line that will get equal money on both sides of the line, right? The public then moves the line based on their betting. So they like, obviously, the Bucks, and they've bet them down to a 3.5-point underdog. I think that's still a good value on the Saints. I like the Saints in this one, notwithstanding your warning about week one with New Orleans. Packers at Vikings. I think this is the second best matchup of the weekend.
This is a great matchup.
Yeah, Minnesota is a 2.5-point. Minnesota's getting the 2.5 or giving the 2.5, guys? On my screen it says, well, go ahead, David.
They're laying the 2.5. 2.5, yeah, 3 points across the board with Minnesota. This is, honestly, Max, this is about where I think the line should be. You have two teams that are pretty much even on paper and in the standings last year that'll be battling for the NFC North title probably until the very last game of the season. So if you factor home field advantage, which is normally 2.5-3 points, it may not be this year depending on the crowd sizes and whatnot. I think this is exactly where it should be. I would lean Minnesota at home because under Mike Zimmer, who took over in 2014, they have the best ATS record at home and overall, so they do get it done in Minnesota, but they did lose to the Packers in both games last year, including at home. So just beware that they have struggled against the Packers in the past. On the Green Bay side of things, last year 13-3, even though Aaron Rodgers statistically had one of his worst campaigns since getting drafted by the Packers, having his second worst QBR season of date. But they were 8-1 in one score games last year. So take it or give it. Do you think that there's going to be a regression to the means with the Packers winning 8 of 9 one-score games? Or do you think they're just good enough to win a close game, which I fully expect here in this one? But I do side with the Vikings at home and think that there will be a little bit of a regression.
When I hear 2.5 points, I think that the odds makers and the public together believe that the Packers are very, very, very little bit better because they're not getting 3 on the road, right? To me, a field goal, that means you're even. 2.5 points means that we like the Packers a little more, but they're on the road. Let me say this. In a big nationally, like a game of national attention, Kirk Cousins versus Aaron Rodgers with something to prove, I like the Packers. I like Rodgers. I think I like the Packers big in that game, as a matter of fact. I think Rodgers might put it on him. I think he's really on a mission right now. And Cousins, though, he seemed to get the monkey off his back in the playoffs last year. These are quarterbacks in two different classes. Cowboys at Rams, quickly. Cowboys are the 3-point favorites on the road.
And this one I'm actually liking the over, 51.5. They met three times in the last couple of years, 65 points, 52 points, and 65 points. I like a lot of points to be scored. Talked about consistency earlier with familiarity. The Rams bringing almost everybody back on offense. Dallas has a new head coach. It's going to be a lot of fireworks, but I am going to take 3 points at home with the Rams. Opening up a new stadium, obviously no one's going to be there.
Yeah.
But new stadium, Sunday night football, points at home. I'm always a big fan of getting points in prime time.
We have the graphic up. FPI gives Dallas a 51% chance just to win outright, and they're three-point favorites on the road. It seems like the value there is on the Los Angeles Rams. But you think the good bet, not the sucker bet, everybody, which is the working title of this segment, is take the over on points in this one.
I would definitely take the over on points. These two teams have scored a lot every time they face each other, and I do expect Dallas to open it up more with McCarthy as the head coach and Dak off of his career year. And the Rams have shown, even last year when they struggled to a, quote, 9-7 record, Goff led the National Football League in total pass attempts with over 600. So I expect fireworks. You are right that the value is on the Rams. What would be a sucker bet? Laying 3 points on the road with the Cowboys right off the bat before they've proven anything. That's the definition of a sucker bet.
David, appreciate you being with me today, and hope to have you back soon.
Absolutely, Max. You guys have a good weekend and enjoy watching football.
Thank you, brother. All right. Hey, Rod, should we still say for entertainment purposes only? I don't know. I feel like this is family entertainment. We ought to, but I know the stigma of gambling is not what it once was. I don't know. I'll just say for now, this is for entertainment purposes only.
Does Max Kellerman look like the bank teller during a robbery who nervously tries maintaining eye contact with the armed assailant while frantically pressing the security button under the counter?
The Max Kellerman Show on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80, and on your smart speaker. No, I'm not. First of all, Lebatard has it all wrong. I ain't doing any of that hero stuff for a stick-up. No.
You're not pushing the button, man.
Pushing the button? Yeah. You ever see the movies, how that always winds up for the guy behind the counter?
Expired.
888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. The Max Kellerman Show is presented by Progressive Insurance. Drivers who save with Progressive save over $750 on average. Call or click today and find out if we could save you, if they could save you, hundreds on your car insurance. Okay, now.
You heard First Take?
At least it's good to hear your voice finally, because I know I'm First Take. I only hear you on the intro and outro.
Now hear Max's Last Take.
Okay, so Tim Tebow was on First Take today, and he was talking about the idea that he likes the thought of the Big Ten playing football, because what has been found is that the football programs in the Big Ten keep the student athletes safer than the environment of their everyday lives do. There's more rigorous testing, more isolating of positive cases, you know, not as much going out to socialize in less safe areas where the virus may be transmitted more readily. I think it's actually a powerful argument. I think that when you look at how readily available testing is today, how programs can get their hands on it without taking away valuable tests from people who need them. And given the fact that it is the culture of many young people, especially in some areas of this country, to kind of ignore best medical advice about social distancing, that Tebow has a point. Tim has a point. It may be safer. Of course, I don't know, like, if there's social distanced learning, like if flu season hits and it gets bad and there's a second or third or fourth, whatever wave you want to mention, in the middle of fall or late fall, and as it starts to get cold and everything gets shut down again, why should football players not be home with the other students? Tim Tebow's point was, well, yeah, they should socially distance like everyone else. They should, you know, shelter in place or whatever and learn that way online, but then they can still play football games. And I'm actually not as opposed to that as you'd think. Of course, the NCAA has rules about that, right? Like, whatever resources are available to athletes, at least 51% of the student body needs the access to those resources, or else are you still student athletes, right? But philosophically, I'm not really opposed to that. I will say that it has been turned into a political football by Trump, and that these Woodward tapes that have come out where in early February, you could hear Trump tell Bob Woodward, who of course was along with Woodward and Bernstein were the reporters who broke Watergate. Woodward saying, or Trump telling Woodward that it was, you know, this is five times deadlier than the worst flu, most strenuous, I think was how he put it, flu. And then on February 26th, several weeks after he'd had that interview with Woodward, and we've heard the tapes, this is not like media or you can't trust the source. You hear Donald Trump on audio with Bob Woodward. He came out and publicly said, during a task force, a coronavirus task force briefing at the White House, the flu kills 25 to 69,000 people a year. And if you look at what we have with the 15 people in their recovery, we're in great shape, essentially. Anyway, he was sending contradictory public messages. And there has since then, through leadership or a lack of leadership at the highest levels, a prevailing feeling in some parts of the country that the coronavirus isn't real, or it's some piece of propaganda, or we're just not going to be scared of it. Over 190,000 Americans have now died from this disease, the worst in the democratic industrialized world by far, per capita. And you can look at Sweden and what they did. They were like, no, we're not going to shut things down, and they're doing much worse than their neighbors health-wise. But at any rate, I think given the state that the country is in at the moment, that this has been politicized by the president is not a good thing. And furthermore, I'm not sure that we have taken the steps necessary in term, including people in positions of leadership, impressing upon those who are not impressed with the dangers of the virus to take precautions. It's, again, it's not even just about the health of the student athletes. It's primarily actually about not spreading it to the people most vulnerable among us. Wearing a mask and social distancing and maybe even not playing football at the college level is primarily a selfless act. It's to protect others primarily. Chinay and Golic Jr. coming right up. Max Kellerman Show, ESPN Radio. See you Monday.